Yes?
I have a question.
Yes?
Let's see if I can phrase it. So Vinny talks about cause and effect, and I think about the choices that we make, cause and effect, and we try to be good people, and so we try to make good choices so that the effect is positive. But what happens if you're in a situation when you make a choice and either way there's suffering that would happen to either side?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you choose?
So you're making an assumption that sometimes you don't know what to choose because both are bringing out effects. I think what we always need is wisdom. You need the wisdom to make the right choice. And what differentiates people from a person without wisdom and a person with wisdom is this person who has wisdom cultivated the wisdom. And this person without wisdom, he doesn't really care. He just go on every day, or going all the routines and the rigmaroles of everything, going to breakfast and lunch and dinner and going out partying and playing and karaoke and all that. He or she didn't really care about wisdom. So he or she, in most cases, may be making the wrong choice. So what we should do is we should cultivate wisdom. And that's what the Buddha has been talking about. The Buddha said we should be cultivating prajna. It spells P-R-A-J-N-A. That's a very important word. We call it prajna paramita. Pra, that means beyond. Jna is wisdom. This is the kind of wisdom that goes beyond just ordinary intelligence. And that's contained in the Buddha's teaching. And that's contained in when you meditate deeply into it, it may come out in you because you already have cultivated such wisdom in your previous life, and it just takes a few sessions of meditation to bring it out. You have to be reminded. And some people who practice meditation before in their previous life, sometimes they come for a few sessions and it triggers the seeds. All the seeds of meditations will be wriggling and going, and all these flowers will be trying to sprout out. So that's the purpose of building a temple. That's the purpose of this monk or many other monks who's giving you lectures, is to make sure that the seeds in you are ready to sprout and blossom. And some may not have the seeds. If you haven't got those seeds, we just sow those seeds for you. We spread those seeds in your field of mentality. But if you continue to meditate and all this or that you already have built up would come out, it would try to trigger all those things that you already have. And during the meditation, your lecturer, your teacher may add on some more to it. So most people get a lot of wisdom during meditation and also from insightful contemplation. Like when you're reading a book, and that's the reason why it's important to study teachings. So when you're reading a book, it's not just a religious book. When you're reading any book about humanity, when you're reading a book about, for example, Gandhi, when you're reading a book about successful people, reading a book who struggle for life, it conjure a lot of love confidence in you. So you need to approach the right sources. However, if all your friends are friends of alcohol, are friends of mad music, or friends of sexual pleasures, then you're doomed to be worse than you actually should be. So better to make the right choice. There's no formula saying, okay, when you do this, this is the formula to make the right choice. This would lead to a bad choice. We don't have a formula like that. There are formulas like that. They're very simple ones. Like, do not hurt others. Do not kill. Do not lie. Do not slander. But even those formulas, people don't listen to them. In our five precepts, we already have formulated something for you that would help you to stay away from the vices of suffering. It takes a lot of people who tell you what to do. You know, there's no answer to that, but build up the wisdom for it. And I saw a hand raised in there, so yes? You want to add something to it?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah?
We sometimes chant Heart Sutra, or the words of Heart Sutra. And I was wondering, because it talks about voidness, emptiness.
Yes?
There's nothing to be attained.
Yeah.
There's no enlightenment.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a bit confused.
When it says there's nothing to be obtained, oh yes, you want to make a comment to it, that's fine. So can you make a comment to it, Lee?
Yeah, I was just wondering, attained because you already have it. You are already enlightened. You're just not aware of it yet.
And there's no birth, there's no death. Like, there are several...
Because you're already born. Are you not born yet? Voidness and emptiness does not mean that there's nothing. Does not mean that. Emptiness means, number one, everything, it comes into being because of causes. And everything comes into being because of effects. There's cause and effect, there's causation. So the becoming or the birth of a thing is not the actual birth of it. It's the birth of all the causes that make it look like that. So we don't say, this has the nature of a cup. This, the nature of this cup has no nature, because this is a conglomeration of all the causes put together to make it a cup. And when the time comes that I accidentally dropped it, and then it smashes into pieces, then it's destroyed. So emptiness, that means everything is on causation. It has no self-nature. When something has self-nature, it can determine its fate. It can determine its own creation. It can come out from its own creation, not depending on any causes. And that's, in most other religions, in most people's mind, will be classified as God. God, they say, God does not need a cause. God just comes into being without causes. It does not mean that it's a denial. I want to deny this. I want to negate this. No. It's not denial and negation. It's not pessimistically denying. It just say, I recognize this existence, but I should not attach to it because it exists because of causes. Well, that's number one. Number two is that this is impermanent. Emptiness told us that nothing is permanent. Everything will come to an end. Okay, that's the two. That's the two very major important definitions of emptiness. Well, then the second question you asked then, how does it help me? By understanding emptiness, by understanding voidness, how does it help me in my life? I want benefits so that I can learn better. Let me tell you how it can help you. If you know that everything that comes into being is because of the causes that you cultivated, you begin to be very successful in what you're doing. For example, if you go into First University, for example, in this year, and you know that I've got to build up all these good causes to get the higher mark. I need to do all these notes. I need to read all these things. I need to listen attentively to the professor's lectures. And I need to be very conscientious and confident in what I'm learning. I want to build up all the good causes that will lead me to that A, grade A in this course. I want to build up those causes. If I'm a bad student, I don't really care. I just go to lecture every day and drowsy, and I mean, not even have the textbook, and I just say, oh, I'm getting along, I've just enjoyed university life, what's the mark that I got, I don't really care. So you're not building up courses to get good records of your schooling, of university education. Then you may not get it. So you want to build up all the courses of success in whatever you do, and university education is just an example. In your job, in your employment, in your life, you want to build up every good cause that would lead to every good effect. So you become very positive. You become a planner. You plan all those causes so that you can get that success. If you're not a good planner, you won't build up causes for it. If you want your kids to be very successful, the parents should build up all these causes to educate the kids to go towards that success. Right? And as far as impermanence is concerned, you know that nothing exists for too long. That you know that life is short. You know that you should not attach to things because everything is impermanent. But however, although everything is impermanent, you want to do as much as you can within your responsibility in your lifetime to achieve what you want. Yeah? You have something to add on? Yeah?
A consideration to the first question is the quality of one's intention when we make choices.
Yeah.
We may not make the right choice, but we had a wholesome intention.
Yeah.
Ultimately, our karmic energy is a reflection of the quality of that intention.
Yeah, that's a good comment.
Well,
yeah.
But it didn't work out that way.
That's right. If you already have meditated, and if you have done all your best, if you always meditate, If you're always in the process of building up your prajna, your wisdom, the probability that you commit errors is gradually getting less and less and less until it comes up to maybe about 0.5%. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you didn't learn it, it may be 100% errors. Yeah. Just a few words on the meditation. Some people may not fully understand. What is meditation? Meditation is an introversion of your attention to purify your mind. An introversion of attention. That means you are not trying to divert all your attention outside and attach to them. What do we do if we do not have introversion of attention? What do we do? Usually all our attention is extroversion. So that's the difference between an extrovert, sometimes we say, and an introvert. And sometimes we say, I am an introvert, I'm a failure. And look at those extroverts. They are sociable, they get along with other people. There's no such thing as right or wrong in being an introvert. As a matter of fact, if you read biographies of successful people, most of them are introverts. So don't blame yourself for being not sociable. What happened to you in your daily life? How do you interact with the surroundings? You interact through what? Through your senses. You interact through your senses. Through your eyes, your ears, your nose, your tongue, your body. Your eyes see, right? Your eyes see. And when your eyes see something, then your attention is paying to that object. And you may be enticed by that object. If you're being attracted to that object, many, many effects will come out. Sometimes with good effects and bad effects, but then you're extrovert, you're being attracted by the object. Your eyes are being attracted by the objects. Your eyes, your ears, you listen to music, your ears listen to it and you're being attracted to it. So all your senses go out. Your tongue, you taste the food, your nose smell the fragrance, your body feel the touch. All your senses work extroward. And when your senses go extroward, they're not under control. Most of the time they're not under control. They start to attach to all those objects. How many objects are there? Millions of objects. Just my eyes, for example, I see this thing. I don't like it. I hate it. And you have a hatred built up because of this sight. I see these flowers. I love these flowers. So you have a beloved relationship with the flowers that build up. There's another emotion build up. You go into shopping and you see a diamond ring. You say, oh, how beautiful that diamond ring. I don't have enough money. Maybe when nobody noticed it, I would just put it in my pocket. So that sight of the diamond ring increased your greediness and you want to steal it. You want to possess it. So your eyes lead you to do many other things. And how many objects are there that your eyes will lead you to do? I can't, uncountable, immeasurable. But then when you are meditating, you say, no more of those. You want to be introversion of attention to purify the mind. So all these senses are going out. Now you don't want to be cheated by all these things because you react to all these things. When we say react, you react with emotions. You react with passion. You react with desires. You react with greediness. You react with jealousy, with hatred, with envy, with lots of these emotions. You react your emotion to what your senses feel outside. If you're meditating, you're not doing the same thing anymore. You have more wisdom. Because what? Because you step back and look at your own reaction. When you're meditating, you stand back. You're not that person. You stand back and look at I see this lady. I react to it with the sensual desire. Now I look at this reaction. I say, no more of this reaction. So you look at your reaction instead of have your senses being enticed and cheated by the outside. Who can examine one's own reaction? One is just submerging reactions and act accordingly. They are not objectively standing behind their own reactions and examine it. They don't do that. If you can be objective judge standing behind the panel, looking at all these reactions and not be cheated by them, you are a saint. You are a saint, and you will be away from suffering, because it's most of the time, these emotional reactions lead you to suffering, most of the time, 99% of the time. Now you're that, you're objectively sitting behind it, you can, don't get cheated by it. You are enjoying happiness, not a reaction. You're responding to a reaction. A response is different from a reaction. A reaction is emotional. A response is rational. Which one you prefer? You want to be objectively rational, right? Because why? Because your life will be happier by being rational. Your life will be doomed for failure if you are irrational. So the Buddhist teaching is lead you to happiness. But how many people would really enjoy doing that? How many people would be enjoying meditation? They would be enjoying the alcohol, not meditation. If you come to a point that, oh, if I can go home and meditate for 1 hour now, I would feel extremely happy. The left hemisphere here is responsible for learning for names since birth, for memories, for actions, the languages and everything, the left. And this right is very insightful. It corrects you. It heals you. It's philosophical. It's beyond, it's metaphysical. As a matter of fact, many of this right hemisphere of the brain, you only used up 10% of it. You haven't used it up. If you have a brain damage, if it's on the left side, then you lost your memory. You lost your names, you lost what you learned. But if you haven't damaged your right side will be a healing effect to heal the left side. And you'll be amazed. That doctor can heal up the left side. So that left side of the brain is where, when you're meditating, you're exploring into it. The right side of the brain, you're exploring more and more into it. Even the scientists really haven't really explored that much. They only can explore 10% of what is in there. But if you continue to explore using your meditation on the right side of the brain, then you will find you're at one with the universe. You will find that your wisdom level has increased more and more. The magic is there. And I still need to remind you to read that book, which is really good, A Stroke of Insight. That book is called A Stroke of Insight, where a brain scientist, Harvard University, he had a brain hemorrhage. Is it called hemorrhage?
She had a stroke.
She had a stroke, and a lot of blood comes out from the left side of the brain. And she couldn't speak, couldn't remember, lost her memory, lost everything. But she's a scientist, a brain scientist. But she was able to be at peace because somehow in the right side of the brain, he knows that it has a healing effect. And she continued to use the right side of the brain to heal up the left side. And after 3 years, she became recovered. And she make an account of what she experienced. She lost the left side of the brain. She found that if she put all the intellectual attention to the right side, she's at peace. Even though she couldn't speak, lie in bed, no movement, no actions, no memory, and nothing. But he's at peace because the right side of the brain works. And that's the right side of the brain that every meditator is exploring. Every time when you sit there and sit still, you're exploring into the unknown. People take adventure. People want to take adventure in the desert, in the forest, in the wood. They never would have a chance to take an adventure of their own brain. You are special. You want to take a journey into your own brain. Find out more about it. 2,600 years ago, there was a prince who took a journey into understanding the right side of the brain, and he became the Buddha. Don't you want to explore into it? That uncanny, inexplicable journey into the unknown.